Saddle up your horses.
Well, welcome everyone to Red Sky Radio, the Robin Walters Show. God bless you this Independence Day weekend. These are always tough for me in the sense that I like to have something a little bit, at least a part of it, particular to the holiday, a little bit anyway. And it always seems like it's not quite so applicable when the program comes out very shortly after a holiday. Today, I'm not sure if you're getting this on Friday. Some are. On July 4th, some the next day or whatever. But I can't do it the week before because it seems premature. At least that's my, that's my challenge. And I want to say happy Independence Day. I do not say happy July 4th any more than July 3rd. I mean, we are the only country, I think, that actually has a birthday. And the birthday is July 4th. But it is Independence Day. That is what it is. We celebrate the independence from essentially a totalitarian regime, which periodically, though not by the Brits, but by those who dwell among us, attempt to reassert itself periodically in this country. And I actually had thought about coming to you with a whole bunch of patriotic quotes today, and let that be the program. But there are other things that just need to be covered. And why? Because we are a free country. Why? Because we're free, at least for right now. But I want to say that the reason I'm not going to fill this program up with quotes is because we had to fight, and I say we, our ancestors had to fight hard to get the freedom. And it's up to us now, today, to fight hard to keep the freedom. Once you get it, you got to keep it. And to me, it's sort of like back in the Iraq War, and you had all that action that was going on in Fallujah. And ultimately, with all the jets, with all the pounding, all the bombs, all they do is sort of make the job easier for the ground troops, be they the Army or the Marines. I think they were both there. But they got to take control of the land. You got to bomb it. You got to take control. You got to fight hard to get it. But it doesn't end with that. Now you have to maintain. Now you have to keep your possession. You have to keep what you have striven very hard. Striven, is that a word? Strove very hard. What you did to get it, now you have to also continue to do to keep it. And it seemed like to me, I was just looking for one particular quote that would best reflect from a patriotic standpoint where we are. And this is what I came up with. Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigues of supporting it. Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. As much of a challenge as it was to gain our freedom, there is a continuous effort to maintain it. That's where we are in this country. Oh my. Because you have a house and maybe you got a termite problem. You exterminate it, right? You got a clean slate. The termites are gone, deader than doornails. But they don't sleep. They look for opportunity to come back and will attempt to reassert dominion over your property. And so much so that I'm going to complete my quote list here, just number two, with Thomas Jefferson. When he said, the tree of liberty must be refreshed, from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. And how true that is. You know, we have these hard-fought freedoms, which we now just sort of lounge in them, considering them to be, what's the word here? Optional, that we have our freedoms. It's an option to have our freedom, and if we don't, well, so be it. Or if we do, it doesn't require anything to maintain it. But as I have said on this program, I do expect a cessation by states to leave, seceding, maybe a civil war. I tend to think that it's headed towards a civil war department, if you will, that the Tree of Liberty needs to be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. I don't look forward to it. I don't want it. It's just one of these sort of ugly necessities that seem to be part of the human situation. But for right now, we celebrate the independence that we have. And to help celebrate that, I have some good news stories, which I always promise to start with. I don't always finish with them because maybe I run out. But it's hard to ignore the Supreme Court victories. I'm sorry, our victories given to us by the Supreme Court. And Amy Coney Barrett certainly, reestablishing herself as the a principal pick of Donald Trump, or certainly one of them. But goodness, boy, she wrote some great opinions. We have all kinds of good news, which I'm not going to spend a lot of time on because it's hard to imagine that you wouldn't already know about them. That the Supreme Court upheld a Texas law requiring age verification for pornographic websites. The left can't stand this. The left loves porn. They won't admit that, but they do because it makes them feel better about their own sins. And the whole other deal about the LGBTQRSTUVWXYZ indoctrination that was going on in Maryland that struck down by the Supreme Court said, look, these parents have religious freedoms that are greater than your institutional standards, and I'm going to put in my own words, of mediocrity and moral perversion. And the kids don't have to do this. It requires parental consent if a school desires to implement a parental consent thing, or because the option is if they don't have parental consent to be able to opt out, then they can't teach it. You can teach it, but it requires parental consent. If you don't want it, you opt out. The queers say they're being attacked, when in reality, they are the ones that have been attacking our children for coming up on decades now. Just horrible what they consider to be the key element of education, and that is everything debauched sexually seems to be their mantra. And why? Again, well, to make them feel good about their own sins. What better way to feel better about your own sins than to get other people to sin with you? Or better yet, to sin worse than you? Well, it's not complicated. It really isn't. Next great piece coming out of the Supreme Court decides that states can block Planned Parenthood from getting Medicaid funding. This is huge. I mean, I hate to say this, but we've got a Republican Congress which did not have the cojones to clearly defund Planned Parenthood. Now, with this Senate bill, I don't know. There was some thought, well, yes, that piece actually is still in there, and the Senate's going to knock it out. Because I'm going on a little bit of a break for a couple of days. I'm going to not be able to access immediate news. I won't be able to read what's actually in the Senate bill, but it's got to be worked out with the House as to the differences. that there are, because there are a lot of differences. Now they got to be hammered out. And Donald Trump has to cool his jets to demand that this bill be done by July 4th. No, Donald, I'm sorry. I love your policies, but this is wrong. You do not have the right, you do not have the authority to sort of compel people to rush through something before it's been hammered out and thoroughly thought out, just to fit your time schedule of being able to want to say on July 4th that you got this bill through. I mean, to rush people through without fully reading it, comprehending it, getting hammered out. You know what you're bringing up, Nancy Pelosi, with Obamacare. We have to hurry up and pass Obamacare so that we can then read it. We have to hurry up and pass it so that we have time. Then we can have time to read it. What an absolute idiot, moron, imbecile is Nancy Pelosi. But don't sort of do the same thing in different language, Donald. Hurry up, get this thing done. No, it's supposed to be a deliberative process. Great legislation is not rammed through. That's not the way that it's done. You don't just take a ramrod to Congress to push something through. You know, it was Thomas Edison. Well, I'm going to another quote here, but this one just came to my mind. He said, there's been many, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the exact quote, but something to the effect that there's been many horrible legislation or bad policy enacted under the belief that something must be done. We got to do something. So we got to hurry up and do something. And the consequences then fall later on as to why did we not take time to think this provision through. Now, I understand the Democrats want to drag this out because they want to defeat Trump. They don't, I mean, goodness sakes, you have these left-wing judges, Elena Kagan, saying how horrible it is that the Supreme Court struck down the right of a federal district judge to impose a universal sanction, nationwide sanction. And, of course, 3 years ago, when a conservative district judge struck down, I can't even think what it was now, by Biden, she came out and said, there is no way that one federal judge should be able to dictate the policy of the United States by striking down, I want to say it was the DACA or the Dreamer thing. No, it was student loans. It was a student loan thing where Biden had unilaterally, with a stroke of a pen, because he learned that with Obama. Obama was the master of executive orders. He's the one who greatly expanded the authority of the president. Obama picked it up. Trump's continuing right on, Mr. Executive Order himself. But it was in a situation where Biden just simply was canceling student debt. And a federal district judge said, you can't do that. And Kagan was ballistic that one judge could strike down a nationwide policy. And now this hypocritical prostitute of the left, because that's what she is, simply flips sides because it's Trump. It doesn't matter what it is that's being done to the three witches of Westwick on the Supreme Court. It's only a question of who's doing it. If Biden's doing it, it's fine. If Obama's doing it, it's fine. If it's Trump doing it, you know, this is horrible. We are absolutely shredding the Constitution. But just give me a left-wing judge and I'll do your bidding. So this is great, though, that the states can block the Planned Parenthood because Congress doesn't have the guts to do it. It now falls to the states to start blocking it. And, of course, it started with I forgot what state it was now, Texas. No. Boy, it just escaped me. But anyway, the state that it started with, they now can block it, and any state can block Medicaid funding for killing innocent unborn children. So, yeah, those women will have to travel to California or Illinois or New York or Massachusetts or Oregon or Washington, some state where they just thrive, some state where the death cults own the state legislature and the courts and the governor's mansion to get what they want. They can go get them. They go slaughter your kids in California. Gavin Newsom is big on it. He calls it abortion tourism. But back to Amy Coney Barrett. This was just, I'm going to read, you may have heard this, but it is the quote, if you will, of, to me, of the decade. And it deals with these individual federal judges striking down policy issued emanating from the White House to have effect throughout the entire United States. And Ketanji Brown Jackson, who is the loser of losers in the Supreme Court, Joe Biden said, I'm going to appoint a black woman. Well, what about that is not misandrist racism? You hate men, and you're going to make a racial pick for the Supreme Court. You already got a black man, 1 out of 9, right? Actually, 1 out of 9 actually almost exactly represents the racial makeup of the United States of blacks. They make up about 1/9 of the population. She already satisfied that, but he's too dumb, stupid, and a puppet to do that. So he appoints this total nimrod, Ketanji Brown Jackson, of course, doesn't know what a woman is. So I guess we can question her femininity, right? But then she goes bonkers on the decision that the judges, one judge can't set policy for the whole United States. And quoting Amy Coney Barrett, she says, we will not dwell on Justice Jackson's argument, which is at odds with more than 2 centuries worth of precedent, not to mention the Constitution itself. We observe only this. Justice Jackson decries an imperial executive while embracing an imperial judiciary. And some of the comments coming in after that says even Jackson's left-wing colleagues think she's an absolute clown. And she is. She hasn't said anything of sense. There's nothing cogent. She is the worst case of affirmative action I've ever seen in my life. And all the reasons that we should scrap DEI and the wokeism, because she is the wokester of all time. But Sotomayor, Kagan are right there. Imagine Donald Trump not having been elected and 2 of the older justices retiring and getting appointed by 2 more whack jobs. Then it's time to secede. It is time for civil war. It is time to get up and get gone. Secede, and then the civil war is when the federal government tries to suppress you. And you say, I'm sorry, it's been nice, but now we have to scream. Now we have to leave. There is a time and there is a place for it. There is a time and place for it almost 250 years ago, wasn't there? The oppressions of King George, which were great and many, great in the degree of offense and many in number. And we threw off that yoke of bondage. And going back to Thomas Jefferson here, that the tree of freedom needs to be fresh periodically with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It does come around because we have the longest running constitutional republic in the history of the world. The history of the world. And you would think that that would be reason right there to be celebrating it as opposed to tearing it down like the Democrats want to do. So anyway, so we have the step towards judicial restraint. And going back with just one more comment about the federal judges being reined in. Well, you know, I mean, let me just say something here. I got, before I even get started on this, we got 335 federal judges, district judges. If one federal district judge could set the policy for the United States, but then the decision is also handled by a different district judge, which does just the opposite. Well, the answer to this thing is to send it up to the Court of Appeals and let the Court of Appeals, and if they don't deal with it, it goes to the Supreme Court. But you hold off on these universal injunctions because the left knows this. They suck at the polls. They suck at the election booth. They suck in a constitutional republic when they have lost not only the Electoral College but the popular vote and all of the swing states. All they got left are these tyrants breathing their threatenings and dark robes on they are the tyrants. And I think, I'm not sure who it was, that was not Hamilton, but one of those founding fathers feared an unrestrained judiciary more than anything else. And why? Because they are not elected. And getting their derrieres booted off the bench is not easy to impeach a judge. So quoting here, it says, federal judges in California reined in with arrest. Anyone following federal court decisions over the past several years has witnessed the particularly troubling pattern emerging from California's federal courthouses. These courts have repeatedly issued nationwide injunctions that have effectively allowed West Coast judges to set immigration policy for Texas ranchers, policy for Florida homeowners communities, and for families all across the heartland. And that's why you just have to say to these judges, screw you guys, we're not doing it. You're going to appeal it up to the appellate courts and then have it go to the Supreme Court. But in the meantime, your injunctions have to be stayed, meaning they have to be stopped. They have to be left in place. Anything more than you have a rogue judiciary, which needs to be challenged by whatever means necessary to secure our freedoms, right? That tree of liberty requiring the blood of tyrants and the blood of patriots. So those are the good news stories coming out of the Supreme Court. But one more here. I love this fact that the Rwandan foreign minister, which I wish I could pronounce his name, but you tell me how you pronounce it. It's Olivier, O-L-I-V-I-E-R. Say this last name 10 times fast. N-D-U-H-U-N-G-I-R-E-H-E. Nudahungary? I don't know. It kind of, when I try to say it, it just comes out being nude in Hungary. And I know that that's not really the right pronunciation. But he said, I'm sorry about that. There are times I don't really think much before I say something. Anyway. So this Rwandan foreign minister has said, quote, Trump absolutely deserves the Nobel Peace Prize for helping end a 30-year conflict with the Congo by way of his peace agreement. This guy deserves it. He pulled it off. We've been trying to do this for 30 years. Barack Hussein Obama gets the Nobel Peace Prize for what? Being the first half-black guy to get elected. He didn't do anything as a community organizer. Nothing to earn the Nobel Peace Prize. In fact, the Nobel Peace Prize, honestly, it's nothing worse than, in his case, a piece of paper with cow dung on it. And it means nothing other than that he got $1 million for it. Community organizer? So is the next Nobel Peace Prize going to come when the first Indian, like Vivek Ramaswamy, is elected president? Or maybe the first 100% black president? But if he's a Republican, they won't get it. As I said a few weeks ago, the left Trump derangement syndrome is so severe. It has the left hating this country at every turn, because if Trump wants to make America great again, then the left wants to make America horrible, like it was under Biden and Obama. It's very clear. I mean, why they don't want America to be great is because we keep reverting back to this. They have to get things worse for them to feel good about their sin. And we know where this whole thing is leading. I mean, Trump effectively solved the conflict between India and Pakistan. Or as Barack Hussein would say, Pakistan, Pakistan. Well, he solved that one, didn't he? Israel and Iran aren't shooting at each other right now. That's not permanent. There will never be a permanent peace in Israel until Jesus returns, smokes the bad guys, and sets up his reign in Jerusalem. But blessed are the peacemakers, those of us who in our place and time can bring about a peace, even if it does not last past our lifetime or what have you. We're rewarded for what we are doing and attempting to do. It doesn't have to last forever to receive our due reward, to be blessed for bringing peace. Of course, the real peace is between man and God. That's where the real peacemaking is. When the angel came down at Christmas time, said, "Peace on earth, goodwill toward men." He didn't say among men, he said toward men. Because the message at Christmas time was there was born one who would be the Savior and would be the reconciler of the breach that exists eternally between God and man for man's sin. And there is no reconciliation. Well, let me put it the other way. Until there's reconciliation between God and man, then there can be really ultimately no reconciliation between man and man. You have to be reconciled yourself before you become a reconciler. Now, Trump, I don't know where he stands. Spiritually, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt here. He's just a Jehu. He's a bull in a china shop. He's obviously fulfilling God's calling in many areas and doing a darn good job of it, but he's brought peace between Rwanda and the Congo. He has stopped the warring between India and Pakistan, between Israel and Iran. Now, he hasn't fulfilled something he said he'd do. He said he'd have peace on day one between Ukraine and Putin. And Putin is besting him. But that doesn't mean Trump shouldn't be rewarded for his attempt. So far, he's 3 out of 4. Ukraine and Iran, they are not a lost cause. I mean, Ukraine and Russia, they still can be reconciled. And trust me, he's working on it. But so far, he deserves 3 Nobel Peace Prizes. He's just working on number 4. So, Arizona, my relatively new home state, having fled California. I can't believe we're on a break already. Don't go away. We got a lot more here to cover today on this Independence Day weekend. God bless you. We'll be right back.
The Robin Walter Show is a listener-supported program. Your contribution goes to help as many people as possible to hear that the Word of God has answers to help you survive and even thrive in the dark days ahead in this country. We pledge to bring you the critical information you need to make informed decisions in this age where big tech and big media have conspired to rid our country of everything Christian. Please send your support to Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. That's Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. Thank you.
Oh, hey, I'm sorry I didn't turn that one down. I meant to do that. That was a little strong. I apologize. But I fought the law, and the law won. Well, that's as close as I could get in my inventory of music to an Independence Day message, which really is, we fought the law, and we won. Because the law, almost 250 years ago, was lawless. Lawlessness. The mark of the Antichrist. That's also the mark of the little Antichrist, which we don't need to go into any particular name-calling. But, okay, so from my home state of Arizona, something they're looking at putting on the ballot, I don't think it got done before they ended their session. One of the things that's great about this state is that it has a part-time legislature. They go into session in January, and they're done by the end of April. What a concept. What a concept for the people who make the laws to actually have to have another job and live under the laws that they made. See, there are some states, California, Michigan, I think a few, they've got full-time legislatures. They don't really have to actually have another job, which means they don't have to live under the jobs that they, under the laws that they pass. Which comes right out of Scripture when Jesus is talking about the Pharisees laying burdens upon the people, burdens which they themselves don't lift or carry. How about that? So what if we had a part-time legislature in Washington? Oh, they say, oh, we got too many bills to pass and things. Well, that's part of the problem. You're passing too many bills. Maybe a part-time legislature is a great idea. And whack the wages and the perks and the benefits and their deluxe health care that they got to keep while they stuck us with Obamacare. So they got to go back to their respective states and work under the laws federally that they helped pass to keep them in much closer touch with their constituents, would it not? The people originally in this country, it wasn't a full-time legislature. Not even close. Not even close. They went back to their jobs as farmers or butchers or lawyers or pastors. A lot of them were pastors. Well, that's one of the great things about Arizona, along with its gun laws here. It's the freest gun state in the country. But they're going to be deciding a couple of things when they return here, whether drug cartels should be designated as terrorist organizations at the state level and whether or not we should have the death penalty by firing squad. Yeah, baby. Now, you think that I'm looking forward to watching people get shot on TV? Well, we see it in the news all the time. But the point here is those states that have it, I think there's Kentucky, Oklahoma, Texas. I'm not sure of all the states that execute and can now execute by firing squad. But I fully support it. It's cheaper. It's actually more quickly lethal than the injections. And one party was writing the other day and said, you know, I don't know that we should do this, but if we do, it should be on TV. Well, it was criticized because it said, well, you don't make entertainment out of this sort of violence. We don't. Why would we do that? Well, it's not entertainment. But if every chump that's thinking and planning his next burglary or assault sat down and watched somebody get toasted on TV, the blood come out and the person died, real live deaths. Contradictory, right? A live death. It's not gruesome. It's not glorifying violence. It's just showing this is what's going to happen to you if you commit crimes worthy of death. You get caught and you're properly convicted by a jury of your peers. It's adios, pal. Well, I'm reading something to you today from The Blaze. And this is why I meant to mention this earlier. You definitely want to hear Sunday Morning with Robin Walter. And I cover, the title of it is, What Does the Bible Say About Guns in Church? And in that piece, I reference the article that I'm going to read about here. And it's written by Owen Anderson just a week ago, dealing with a ridiculously gruesome death of a pastor here in Arizona. Wasn't by a gun either. It said, he's writing in the first person, so I'm going to read it as the first person. He said, just down the road from my house, a pastor was crucified in his bed. And I'm going to stop right there. That's absolutely true. This pastor that was killed, he was suffocated, and then the man cut him up so that there was a lot of blood, pinned his arms to the wall like it was like he was being crucified, and put a crown of thorns on the pastor's head, lying there dead in his bed. The sheriff said, I haven't seen anything this horrific in forever. That's just how bad it was. And he had 13 other pastors lined up to execute, 3 more in Arizona, but then all over the country, from Maryland to Detroit to Texas, and I think there's one in Seattle. But he goes on to say here, this is not a horror movie. It's the real story of Pastor William Schoeneman of the New River Bible Chapel in Arizona. And I want to thank the man named Ken who sent this story to me. I appreciate it, Ken. Thank you so much. I hadn't heard about it, and now I've gone bonkers in the research. He said his murder in this May received almost no media coverage until last week, when the suspect not only confessed to killing, but admitted to his plans to assassinate 4 more pastors in Arizona. I think I said 3, and others across the country. As a pastor who lives not far from where this happened, I couldn't help but wonder, was I on the list? The motive, the suspect claimed to be on a divine mission to purify Israel of anyone who teaches that Jesus is the Son of God. His logic was as deranged as it was deadly. You can't kill the Son of God, so Jesus isn't the Son of God. Therefore, anyone who says otherwise must die. He targeted pastors who preach that God forgives repentant sinners through Christ. And I'm going to interject from another article. There was an interview of this guy in the jail. And he was totally fine killing pastors because he said he knows that Jesus will forgive him. So this man was hunting Christians. This wasn't an isolated attack. Just last week, a deacon in Michigan, which I mentioned, stopped a would-be shooter from opening fire inside the church. Whether through violence or through the daily pressure campaign of soft totalitarianism from elected leftists who impose radical gender and social ideology, Christians face growing persecution in America. So here's a question. Will these attacks on Christians be prosecuted as hate crimes? And he goes on to talk about the fact that this is clearly a hate crime, but it's a double standard given the fact that everything is a hate crime except killing Christians. And it was kind of, it was beyond interesting where he mentioned the fact that he was on a panel at Harvard, And the as a Harvard Law School, and they were, this was just before queer marriage was forced down our throats. And he said one panelist was an Ivy League professor of some renown who smiled and said, "Christians need to be persecuted, so let them be," end quote. Then the audience applauded wildly. No one flinched. He said, "It's time for Christians to wake up. The age of neutral universities has ended. Our children are not just being taught to tolerate different views. They're being indoctrinated to hate what is true, good, and beautiful. They're told in no uncertain terms that Christianity is the problem." And the killer in Arizona refused dialogue. He chose violence to silence the truth. Ask yourself, how different is this from the message preached by DEI activists and gender ideologues who say we must either conform or disappear? And you know what I mean by the word disappear. So why this is really pretty something is because it so lines up with what just happened in England, where a man was convicted of a religiously aggravated public order offense. The guy was the man who did the beating was Muslim, and he beat up a Christian preacher, and the Christian preacher got fined $300 because this whack job Muslim was so upset with his speech that he attacked him. So the report here is that if you're hearing this right, that a man's violent attack on another was cited as evidence of the victim's guilt. Now, what this brings to my mind is a biblical passage where the Pharisees want Jesus executed. They're before Pilate, and Pilate says, what crime has he done? What has he done that would bring about? And they return and says, hey, if he hadn't committed a crime worth death, we wouldn't have brought him to you. So, in other words, the perpetrator is presumed innocent. The victim is presumed guilty because the perpetrator would not have done this had the victim not deserved it. In this particular case, the man was a Christian who was beaten up. And he's the one who gets fined for preaching the gospel. The one who does the beating up, the whack job Muslim, Islamist, jihadist, whatever, he's the one who goes scot-free. So where are we headed in this country? Why is it that having fought to keep it, we must now fight? I mean, having fought to get it, we must now fight to keep it. To not be fatigued, having won victory in battle, but getting fatigued and trying to preserve the liberty that we have. When you got the socialist New York mayor, hopeful, he won the primary, Zoran Mamdani, he is pledging $65 million on sex changes for minors. And he calls himself a Muslim? Now, keep in mind the case where the Supreme Court ruled, and Amy Coney Barrett, and I mean, no, she didn't write that opinion. I think Gorsuch did, dealing with, hey, you can't force this queer crap down the throats of these kids, impressionable kids, without the permission of the parents. The parents can opt out. Who brought that case? Last name was Mahmoud. He was a Muslim, joined by, I think, a couple of Catholics and a couple of Greek Orthodox, which is kind of close to Catholic. I don't really quite get that distinction, but they seem to be a little chummier than the typical Protestant group. But anyway, the lead plaintiff was Mahmoud. He's a Muslim, so you don't force this queer crap down my kids. Don't make my kids undergo this. Don't deny me the right to opt out. The Supreme Court stood up for him, stood up with him and for him. I find it interesting that true Muslims, not the jihadists, the ones who still want their faith to prevail in this country at the expense of Christians and Jews, are also at the forefront of fighting against abortion, queer marriage, queer sex, sodomy, transitioning, and LGBTQSTUVXYZ indoctrination in the schools. So how can Mamdani be a good Muslim? Well, he's got to be a crappy Muslim in the sense that he actually doesn't even stand up for what Islam supposedly supports, and that is that it's a parent's responsibility to teach the children. And why should we be surprised? ICE has come out here and says that left-wing activists are now targeting the children of ICE agents. And that is why, well, the left has gone, has always been bonkers over masks. I mean, I had some left-wing nut job in a Walmart tell me to put a mask on. I said, hey, you worry about your germs, I'll worry about mine. He was about 6'8". Looked weird. But he couldn't punch me out there in Walmart in front of about 10 other people. So I just said what I needed to say. I'm not shutting up. Not at all. But why do the left-wing activists want the ICE agents to take off their masks? So that they can take their pictures and then have an easier time targeting their children. So, this thing about having guns, and which I want you to hear on Sunday morning with Robin Waldridge, guns belong in church, why they belong on our person, why anybody who doesn't want to be an infidel and would care, wants to care for his children and provide for his children, is going to provide not just food, clothing, and shelter, but also for their safety and their lives, mentally and spiritually and physically. The ones that are the, that are the most violent are the leftists. They're satanically inspired, demonically possessed, and that's what we have out of Genesis 6. The world was filled with violence, and it was dominated by an enormous queer population, I might add. But there are some real men out there. Yeah. And I am going to give a shout-out here to my black brothers. Because in a poll here, Pete Buttigieg, but I say that with all due respect, in a poll among Democrats as to who they support, the one they support the most is Harris. After that is... gosh, I forgot who it was. I didn't write this down. I know third was Newsom. Harris was first. Dead last is Pete Buttigieg. And they were identifying the percent of support among blacks, but specifically black males. And it was 30% had picked Harris. Somebody else got 13. I wish I could remember. Newsom was 12. Where did Pete Buttigieg land? What do you think the percentage was that he had from blacks, males? Zero. Dead zero. Black guys don't want some white queer guy as president. None of them. And apparently even the black queers don't want a white queer because none of them want him. Well, that won't stop the left from continuing to push towards that, because that's kind of what they do. And how do we bring a country together? Well, you know, the Senate rejected, based on Democrat input, the amendment to kick illegal aliens off Medicaid. That's right. The Democrats want illegal aliens healthcare. They sneak into the country, they break laws, rape our young girls, do all sorts of stuff, drive drunk, drive semi-trucks and get hired by companies and kill five people like the jackass did the other day, in, I think in Texas, killed five. Like he's illegal, driving a truck for some company. Fire him, send him away. But we want to give them Medicaid? We pay. We don't stop them at the border. These are Joe Biden's invitees. They don't get stopped at the border. And then once they're here, because the Democrats know that long enough, given enough time, they'll become citizens or they will vote illegally like they do in California and New York. And that will be the certainty of a Democrat victory. Well, be careful what you hope for, Democrats. So we, you and I, get to pay the Medicaid bill for illegals. Well, maybe not. Maybe we have another Supreme Court case. Look, you don't have to fund Planned Parenthood through Medicaid in your particular state. So maybe that particular state can defund illegals, even if for that particular state, even if the Congress can't get their act together and have the cojones to actually engage in an increasingly rare phenomenon called the exercise of common sense. But you see why we started with where we started. Of Thomas Paine's quote, that we have to fight to get the freedom we have. And in an odd sort of way, we might have to fight even harder to keep it. And why? Because the war that was won, the War of Independence against Britain, was against certainly soldiers, the Redcoats, and there were Tories who were the loyalists to England, who were bad guys and didn't want to be out from underneath England. But now where are our enemies? They're not confined to a foreign government or just those who support a foreign government as it was almost 250 years ago. No, our enemies are in corporations pushing this garbage. Our enemies are in universities. Our enemies are on college campuses of all sorts. Our enemies are in Hollywood. Our enemies are all around us. They are in our midst. They are not quite as easily identifiable as the two that were during the Revolutionary War, War of Independence. The Redcoats, you know who they were. They were wearing a red coat. And those who were the Tories actually were, for the most part, were fairly outspoken. But what we have today are people that are just simply everywhere in almost every institution, including, I hate to say, a lot of our churches. I was back in Michigan a month ago. They weren't waiting for Queer Pride Week. The Episcopal Church there had the fag flag flying out proudly. I've now been told that it's there 365 days a year. The town where I practice law was celebrating Pride. It's interesting. If you ask most pastors, what's the biggest sin? Well, the biggest sin, they'd say, is pride. And they'd be right. But nobody is more prideful of pride than queers. It's all about pride. It's all pride. They can be healed. They can be cured. But honestly, I think, in my opinion, that is the worst element in the United States for overthrowing this country. Very few of them are on the conservative side. None of them are on a biblical side. But to feel better about their sin, like the Pharisees and the Sadducees, to feel better about their sin is their success in getting others to buy into it, which sadly includes a whole lot of our churches that don't have the guts to stand up and say what needs to be said. But on this and all sorts of things, this is why our fight to keep it is maybe harder than the fight to get it. Because I'm not sure there's the resolve in enough people to wage this war like there was 250 years ago. And yet, if we don't wage it, we will be fighting on the back of our heels. When people realize, oh gosh, I should have stood up for this. You no longer have those allies. You didn't stand up to fight against the queer marriage or the homosexual benefits or the imposition of laws that are supposed to combat Islamophobia. We didn't stand up for this. We didn't stand up for that and all sorts of things. And now we wonder, when we're the only ones left, why there's nobody standing next to us. And we're all alone. Having to rely on God, which should be enough, but there'll be a lot of people who will simply compromise their faith to save their neck, save their pride, save their paycheck, their perks, their privileges, and in some cases, their pulpit. Call to action, folks. Remember, you sit tall in the saddle, America, because if we don't, we're toast. Because we ride for who? The captain of the host, as it says in Joshua, our Lord Jesus Christ. God bless you. See you next week.